This is Gary Wakefield, and you're listening to Queer Life Stories.
My name's Gray Scott, and I'm a gay man at 63 years old. I was born in Romford, Essex, just outside London in the UK, in 1956, and with my family we emigrated to Melbourne in May 1960, and so I've been here ever since. So it's virtually 60 years in Australia and 3 years in England. I had two elder brothers, 5 years older and 2 years older. And my mother and father wanted a daughter. So they eventually sort of like took charge of my cousin when she was 3 years old and I was 10 years old. And that was back in the days when you could just take children or hand them around and no one asked questions. It was a very traditional English family. The elder son was the one that everyone worshipped. And, you know, it would go down the tree. And, it was pretty hard growing up in my family. My mother had come from a very bad background herself, one of 13, I think. And my father, he was one of eight, but he was born in Belbow, which is the slums of London. You might have heard of Jack the Ripper. My dad grew up in that area. But of course, Jack the Ripper wasn't around then, but my great-grandparents were just born into that sort of environment. You had to be very tough to survive. And I think that they taught their children to be not only physically tough, but emotionally tough. And so that was born the expression tough love. And my family was brought up on tough love. I obviously was gay from the beginning, but no one really knew. My mother, this is going back through my family and talking to aunts and uncles. My mother had postnatal depression when I was born. But back in 1956, they had no idea what that was. She was just a crazy lady that didn't want to have anything to do with her newborn son. So she was put into an asylum and given electroshock therapy. So I never got the natural bonding that a son has with his mother or a child has with his mother. And with that protection of a mother comes that protection in the family unit. If you get picked on, they sort it out. Because I was unwanted, because my mother really wanted a girl. That's why they adopted my sister, my cousin. I didn't get any sort of protection from my mother at all. I was picked on. Time invested in developing me as a person. Socializing within my own family just wasn't done for me. Any problems within the children, I got the blame for it. I was the scapegoat for everybody. Constantly picked on. I got the nickname of Fat Man, Fatty Arbuckle. So I was teased right through my whole life. In Australia, back in those days, in the early 60s, no one had any idea of what gay was. Well, I didn't. There probably were. But we lived in country Victoria, back then Bayswater. which was just a sleepy little town miles out from the GPO in Melbourne, public transport had only been there the past 10 years sort of thing, and houses were built amongst apple orchards, so we were early settlers, so to speak. It was good living out there in those times, wide open spaces. It was a good life, as in plenty of different things to do, you know, as a kid playing in the streets. But my parents were the way they were, and it was very difficult. I ran away from home a couple of times, and come back when the street lights came on, and then, you know, the slipper I was taken to with the slipper. Corporal punishment was very big in those days. But my parents, they thought they were doing the right thing. They fed me, they sent me to school, and I got a Christmas present, I got birthday presents. And back in those days, as long as parents did those things, they were pretty good. I eventually wanted to try and win my parents' favour, which the only way to do it was to get married. Because both my sons, because free love was coming out then, free sex, you know, in the 60s, 70s, and they both got girls pregnant, and they were shotgun weddings. In those days, it was a big thing, a huge thing. And, you know, that they were shotgun weddings, and my mother was very embarrassed about that, and she couldn't talk highly of her family because they'd got girls pregnant, and one of the grandkids was born out of wedlock, and it was just all horrific. So I thought, oh, well, you know, I want to please my mum, and I'll get married. I didn't know I was gay. I had no idea. I met someone really nice, a nice young girl, through where I worked. We dated. I eventually asked her to marry me, and she said yes. And we went down that road of a married life. And it was pretty horrible to think that on my the eve of the wedding, I was in Queen's Park in Mooney Ponds. Not proud of saying it, doing the beats. But anyway, the next day I got married, walked my wife back up the aisle, went off, saved up all the money, bought a house, had children, and I started to work a second job, and I met a man. I was having experiences before that, but I would just walk away from it and push it to the back of my mind. Never thought about it. Never knew I was any different from anybody else. Just didn't even consider that it wasn't, not that it's not the right thing, but you know what I mean? I didn't know that what I was doing was seen as wrong, deemed as wrong. I had two sons. I met a man down in the local public toilet, and we passed the note through the door, and I went to his house. I'm very nervous, very, 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 very nervous. And it was not my first time, but I met this person, and it happened time and time again. And my emotions became involved after a while. He was an attractive man, and never having gay sex before, it was pretty wow. And anyway, I went down that road, and after a year, I had fallen in love with a man, and I had all these conflicting ideas, perceptions, whatever you want to call them, and it was really, really a difficult situation for me. I'd come home from the part-time job at night to go into my two sons' bedrooms. They were 3 and 4 at the time. And I'd cry over their bed because I had these feelings for a man, and I had no idea what was going on. I was confused. I think the closest thing I'd ever come to a gay was Arnold's Feather in number 96. I don't know if you remember the TV program, but he was the gay person in number 96. And anyway, I eventually bit the bullet and I confessed to my wife, left the house, moved in with this man. Then it came to telling my parents. And I know now you don't have to tell your parents. But for some reason, I was a very honest person, and I still am now. And I have to tell the truth. That's who I am. I'm not truthful and honest. And I went down, and my mum and dad lived in Mornington then. I went down to Mornington, and I sat in the dining room with them and told them. And my mother was absolutely shocked. "You're filthy and disgusting. Get out of my house." And my father said, "You're a sodomite." I couldn't believe, you know, I broke down into tears. I had actually spoken to a psychologist to prepare myself for it. And she had said that, "Well, by what you've told me, you don't have a good relationship anyway. So if it doesn't go the good way of them accepting you, nothing's really changed for you." So that's when I went down there and told them. And I stood up, took the house key off my key ring, put it on the table and said, "So much for 32 years of a son's love for his parents," and walked out. And I then was on my own. I suddenly didn't have my family. I didn't have my mum, my dad, even though it wasn't a good relationship I had with them. I didn't have, they were still my family. And my brother said to me, I forget how I contacted him, or he was in Africa, in Zimbabwe, which was Rhodesia back then. And he'd rang and said, "What's going on? There's something going on." And I told him over the phone that I was gay. Difficult stuff to do. Mm-hmm. And his attitude was sort of like, "Oh, well, what he actually said, look, if you end up in the gutter, you can always come and stay with me." I thought, well, you know, this is the attitude they had, that you're a low life. And that made me more determined. And then my other brother, poor old Ray, he was having he was bipolar. So he was having a difficult time anyway. It didn't seem to worry him at all, but he would lecture me a lot because he was a professor at Monash University, and they lecture. And when you're bipolar, they really get a hold of it. And my sister said, "Well, I can't have much to do with you because her husband wouldn't understand. And besides that, she has two sons." So I'm thinking, okay, so you think I'm a pedophile, but I'm going to take advantage of your children. Back then, I didn't even know what a pedophile was. I don't think many people knew what a pedophile was. But I had no support whatsoever. And I started to go into a depression, and which I've only just come out of. I went into this relationship, which went for 18 years. He was very much like my, very much like my father. So I knew how to operate within that sort of relationship. He was very controlling, very manipulative. It just went for 18 years. But at that time, it suited me. As bad as it was something that I understood, and I could navigate through that because I had responsibility of my two sons. I still remained a very good father to my boys. I love them very much. I see them today, that they're great kids. They're very accepting. But I still have a bit of difficulty being me around my sons. Oh, my mother passed away of cancer. Oh, she used every weapon in her arsenal to make me carry guilt, which I did. I took it on board. I got blamed for her getting cancer. The shock of telling her brought her cancer back. She eventually died of bone cancer. My father, he loved my mother very, very much. You could see that he did. He just couldn't believe that she had gone. He supported her in everything that she said or did. He couldn't believe that she had gone. She was 58. So my father was still reasonably young. He came to my home in Ringwood. My sons were there for the weekend. And on the bookcase was the picture of this man that I was seeing. And my father looked at that picture and said, you need to be careful what you're doing. But that was back in the day when my wife could have actually have stopped me from seeing the children by saying I was gay. So, you know, I was really worried about all that sort of stuff. But fortunately, my wife never did that. She was a very, very good understanding person. And she put the children first, knowing that I was a good father to them. I loved them very much. But my father just couldn't cope with it. Me being gay couldn't be my fault because I was his son. So he blamed my partner. And when we got out onto the front doorstep to say goodbye to him, to my dad, my sons come out to the doorstep and gave him a kiss, their granddad, a kiss and a cuddle. And I walked my dad to the car and my dad assaulted me in the driveway of my own home. It went on for about 20 minutes. It was pretty horrible. He eventually fell back into the car. I couldn't hit him. He eventually fell into the... He opened the car door and he fell into the front seat of the car and his legs were coming out, kicking, kicking, kicking. And he eventually drove off and I went back and there's my sons on the front doorstep. So I don't know if they saw it or not. I had to pull it all together and get them ready for bed and tell them a bedtime story and you know, make sure they were okay. So it was another 7 years. He moved. He didn't even tell me he moved. He went interstate. I'm struggling in a relationship that was just not good at all. And eventually he came back into my life. And I reached out to him because I knew I needed to get out of the relationship. I was being assaulted by my partner. I'd been beaten up 3 times by him. He was very charming. People couldn't see that he would be like that, but he was. And he knew how to manipulate and control me. It was the battered wife syndrome, except it was 2 men. In a very depressed, crazy sort of way, I became stronger. I'd never spoken up for myself. And to stand up and say, I'm not happy with your behaviour, was like, that was the anxiety that came with that. It was so overwhelming at times. It would come out as a great big emotional volcano and it would get lost in translation and I couldn't communicate actually how I was feeling and couldn't say the things I wanted to say, which for my partner was a good thing because he could just keep going on as normal and go, he's crazy. And because my brother had bipolar, I must have had it too. It went on for 18 years. I got stronger and stronger. I kept getting help from psychologists. And eventually I spoke to my father. He'd come back to Melbourne. He was living down at Mornington. I rang him up. I need help. I just need you to, I don't need money or anything. I just need you to be with me. Because I was going to do something that was very scary for me. And I managed to get this person, my partner, out of my life. But he turned up at the doorstep while my father was there. He jumped the side fence. He was suddenly inside the house. I was phoning the police. He pulled a phone jack out from the wall. He spat in my father's face and pushed him. My father was 75 at that time. The police came around, got him to move on and I was left with my father. My father was actually very supportive. My dad eventually had to go back to Mornington. I was left alone. My partner was calling and dropping past and trying to worm his way back in. And I succumbed and let him back in, but it was only for about 2 weeks, and I got beaten up again and had the guts to actually talk to him and say, this is not working. And it would always be the accusations, it's your fault, your fault, your fault. And I said, look, it's not about whose fault it is. You're not happy, I'm not happy, what's the point in this? So I approached it that way. And eventually he agreed, and he came back the next day with a truck, cleared the whole house out. It was my house, cleared the whole house out. I was left with a mattress on the floor and the dog and a few bits and pieces of furniture. But he was out of my life. I gave him a check for $5,200 because there was things of his that couldn't come out of the house. So I gave him the money to cover that, which he financed a court battle with, and that went for 2 years. And he was suing me for $365,000, and that was 14 years ago, which was a lot of money. But back then it was even a lot more money. It was money I worked hard for, that I had suffered for, that I had saved, that I had set my sights in providing a home for my sons. And I had to fight it, and it went to the county court. Before the court case, I had to bring my sons up to the house and tell them that I was gay. I hadn't told them. I said, I've got something important to tell you. You need to sit down. And because, well, what's wrong? What's wrong? Just tell us, just tell us. Because they're thinking I'm sick. And I said, I don't know whether you know, but I'm gay. But my eldest son piped up and said, looked at me and said, well, you're still my dad. You're still my dad. I went, oh, well, good. And then the younger one, I said, well, have you got anything to say? And he said, oh, it doesn't worry me, Dad. What's for dinner? I just said to them, look, if you need to ask, know anything, you can ask me. I'm open and honest. But they never asked. And then I had to bring them back a couple of months later, or a year later, to say, when I told you I was gay and you said that you didn't know, were you just being nice to support me, or, you know, honestly, I need to know whether you did know or didn't know. I said, because you're going to be called in court and you need to tell the truth. You're going to have to swear on the oath and you're going to have to tell the truth. And I said, and the truth is important. And they told me, no, that they didn't know. They had no idea. And for 18 years, I run a gay relationship behind their backs. Anyway, the judge eventually made a ruling that I was a victim of an opportunist, and that I would keep all my finances and that I would keep my house, and I was awarded costs, and I was protected by law against him for the rest of my life. And anyway, I then was free of that, and my father was at that court case, which was good, but he was half deaf, so he couldn't hear all the stuff going on. I then went off into my life as being effectively divorced. But my father was still very hard to deal with. I could have just turned my back on him. Why didn't I? I don't know. But he went another, God, 30 years. And the last 10 years, I was very much a part of his life, keeping an eye on him, because eventually both my brothers moved again away from the family unit. They couldn't cope with my dad. My cousin's sister eventually moved over to London. She couldn't cope with my dad, but I had this sense of duty, and I continued to try and support him emotionally. He was a real, it was full on. But anyway. And eventually I fell into another relationship. I attracted the same sort of man. Oh God, I did it again. I attracted someone like my father. but did it in a really nice way, very manipulative and very controlling, but in a very placid way, which was different. Eventually got out of that, and then my dad came to live with me when he was 89, and I nursed him for the last year. He eventually went into a hospice because I could no longer take care of him. And I was there at his deathbed, holding onto his hand, talking to him and helping him cross over. And the bastard pulled his hand out of my hand. You're still doing that? So I walked out and he passed away on his own. And it wasn't until that was all sorted and I sold up down in, by that time it was Seaford, and moved up here, that I started to come out, cope a lot better. I'm still suffering with depression and I have the medication, and which is great. Don't ever worry about going on to medication. It's the best thing ever. My life is more stable now. I've got nice people around me, but I'm still on my own. I think that I have built some very tall barriers around myself, but I hold hope that there's someone out there that will peel the layers back of this onion and they will find someone. They will find me, and I'm a nice person, and I'm hoping that one day I'll have a relationship, a good relationship with a man where I'm happy and there's love involved. I have a grandson, and that is difficult. I don't know how to reach out to my grandson and pick him up and do all that. I find that very difficult to do. I go to a psychiatrist to find out, but I don't need to know why. It's just the way it is. And my sons, they know that I've had a difficult life, but they're okay with it. I'm okay with it. And yeah, there you go. So there's my story. I watched one of yours, and where his parents were pretty good accepting, and it was all really good, and I thought, well, you know, I don't think I'm a martyr, but God, it was really hard back then. What would it have been like in the 40s and the 50s? That guy that did the Enigma Code, Alan Turing, I think his name was, and that time, and that my parents remember all that, so they were brought up during that time. So, you know, I have understanding of why my parents were like that. My mother said that she could find a psychiatrist that would cure me. I didn't know whether it could be cured or it couldn't be cured. I didn't know nothing about gay. I just wanted to be accepted for me. And I was a good person. But God, I got so much shit for being a good person because I'm gay. Yeah, don't be frightened of talking to somebody. Be it your best friend. Be a professionally trained person, or picking up the telephone and calling a helpline. Do it. Listen to what people have been through themselves, and you can get through it. As difficult as it might be, and things are getting better, it's being more accepted being gay, it can still be a hard road for people. Don't be frightened and do it in your own time too. There's no hurry, rush to do it. Do it when you're ready for it. And if you need to get help beforehand, get it. Get it. Don't be afraid.
If you're struggling with your own mental health and need support or assistance, please reach out to Lifeline on 131114 or Beyond Blue on 1300 224636. Both services are available 24/7. If you would like to share your story, talk about your experiences, or would just like to get in touch, you can email me at queerlifestories@outlook.com or find us on Facebook or Instagram. Just search for Queer Life Stories and send a message. This podcast is a no-budget, one-man operation to produce, but you can support this podcast by following, donating, or subscribing at Patreon. That's patreon.com/queerlifestories. In Tasmania, if you want support for sexuality, gender, or intersex status, you can contact Working It Out on 03 6231
1200. QLife provide anonymous and free LGBTI peer support and referrals for people across Australia wanting to talk about sexuality, gender identity, relationships and more. They're available 3 p.m. to midnight every day on 1800 184 527 or web chat with them at qlife.com.au. You can hear future episodes of Queer Life Stories at Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Please follow, rate, and review. It does really help. We will be back soon. Take care of yourself and each other.